Riders on the Storm. That's a big one. That's an old one. And I'm trying to make a storm. I mentioned last time I wanted to start a revolution. I like that. I think we need to drastically change how we run the planet. But that's just me. And I've been writing and thinking and talking, and I realized one of the things I want to do. Hey, this is Dr. Gene Mesko here at Mostly Hairless Apes in the Evolving Church of Science. In the process of trying to recruit people to a scientific worldview, I realized we need guidelines. If I'm going to make a church, why shouldn't we have commandments? And I thought, but the commandments should be ethical. I think that's what I've talked about before, ethics versus morals. We all have our own moral compass that directs us to things, but what could we agree on socially? Because that's the big crisis of the day. We don't seem to be able to agree on anything. And I realized after the election here in the U.S. that what I've been talking about has come to fruition. People have deferred and they've defaulted to the economy, to the idea that, oh, they're going to get rich, that we're not going to spend money on government stuff. And I just thought, well, what did the left miss? How did they manage to lose to a convicted felon? What was the problem here? Well, according to the math I've been trying to figure out, how do you measure civilization? How do you measure artificial selection? And when we're trying to measure artificial selection, we come up with the idea that civilizations are built based on belief systems, economies, and governments. We have rules about stuff. We have rules how to distribute resources. And all of those should be based on our belief system. Well, if my belief system is science, and science, as a biologist, I'm going to come at it from the perspective of what's good about life and what's good about using science to drive my process, I said, well, where can I extract that? Where can I find those natural laws, those rules that we could take to form a code of ethics that everybody on the planet could go, yeah, that's a good idea? Because that's all I'm looking for. Because that's one of the things I've realized about religion. It's the baby in the bathwater principle. When evolution happens, things don't immediately get thrown out. That's the whole idea of vestigial features. That's why we have an appendix and wisdom teeth and weird things like that. We have a little bit of a tail when we're growing in utero. Because evolutionary history piles up. Mother Nature makes choices through natural selection. And then once humans dawned consciousness, we started doing artificial selection. And if we want to do a civilization, we have to commit to somebody else. We have to commit to other people. And what rules do we have? Well, religions evolved all sorts of rules. They codified. And they always backed it up with gods. They always said, God said you do this. And it's the God thing that I think is bullshit. Because nobody can prove anything, that there's any deities out there. There might very well be. But I thought, well, what does science tell us? Science says, well, let's assume there's not somebody manipulating the rules. Because if there's somebody out there manipulating rules, that means there can't be any constant rules. That the rules could change at any moment. And that, because of that, that's what makes religion so weird. Because then it makes people stay on their toes. It makes people wonder and have doubts. Well, you're supposed to have faith, but you're supposed to have faith in the leadership. That's what they try to tell us, because religion just evolved into a government system. That's what it's a bureaucracy. And you talk to people today, and they talk about the decreasing church attendance. And you ask young people, you ask anybody. And the shift that I've seen seems to be when people say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And that, to me, that means you've got a spirit, you've got a guide, you've got a spirit animal. I've been told it's a black Labrador. But whatever your spirit animal is, whatever guiding principles you use for your moral compass, if you're going to have a civilization, you have to develop an ethical code. And that's what I'm here for today for. I'm here to expand on the new Ten Commandments, or the Ten Recommendations, whatever you want to call them. Just their ethics. They're what we agree on as a society that we should try to use as our guiding principles. And the religious people had some really good ones over the years. Don't kill anybody. Don't steal their stuff. There's been really great rules there. But they're all backed up by God. And once you start questioning God, then the rules fall apart. And then, like I said, that's the baby in the bathwater problem. If you're going to throw out the baby, or the throw out the bathwater when it's dirty, but you got to make sure you don't throw the baby out with it. There's some good stuff in there, even though we got dirt. And so what would be the good stuff that we could extract from nature, extract from looking at life, looking at the reality around us, and understand the universe? And I've broken it down into 10 steps through history, because the first one goes back to the origin of the planet. And if you're familiar with geology, you could talk about the Hadean period. Because as far as we know, what the constant evidence shows us when you read the journals and you bother to get educated is that Earth formed about 4.5 billion years ago. And it was a hot mess. It was a molten blech. As forces of gravity pulled on things and tugged elements into centralized places, and gravity sucked it down into condensed planets and satellites. And it's still going on. There's still asteroid belts and stuff that never coalesced. But obviously we've got some really big ones out there. We've got stars and planets and here in our little solar system out on the on an arm of the Milky Way. And what did Earth do? What happened on Earth to generate life? Well, at some point, as far as biology can tell us, life originated. 4 billion plus years ago, there wasn't any life when we measure that. 3 billion years ago, there was all sorts of cellular life. So what the heck happened? Well, the best theory to date is something called the RNA world hypothesis. And it basically deals with, here's the fun phrase of the day, autocatalytic replicators. That life originated because some chemicals were able to generate a consistent pattern of activity. They were able to stabilize a set of reactions and keep it going long enough to wrap themselves in a compartment, in a membrane. And that gave us cellular life, because that's what life is as far as biology can tell. Every time we look at something that can move around and react to stimuli and reproduce itself and change and evolve over time, all the properties of life, it maintains homeostasis. It keeps its metabolism running by absorbing nutrients and getting rid of wastes, which alter the environment. And that's where we leapt from the Hadean period without life on Earth to the Archean period, where we had life. And how did that occur? And people would say, how the hell could that happen? It'd be low probability. But the point is, it did happen as far as we can tell. If you believe in science, if you're a member of the Evolving Church of Science, and you realize you're a mostly hairless ape and you're trying to figure this out, well, then you realize the first commandment explains it. The first commandment of thinking ethically says maximize probabilities in your favor. Because as low a probability event as the evolution of cellular life would be on a rock, on an arm, on a planet, orbiting a sun in the arm of the Milky Way, it's a probability function. Because when you look at the process in the lab, and you say, can chemicals catalyze their own replication? That's an autocatalytic replicator. And the answer is yes. There's a whole bunch of molecules that can do it. And where did you get those organics in the first place? Well, if you try to simulate our best educated guess, our hypotheses about what existed back in the Hadean era, you had all of these organic molecules, or potentially organic molecules, living in tide pools all over the planet, and nature experimented for hundreds of millions of years. Because how did it experiment? Well, how does a biological system grow? It uses a very basic set of reactions for 99% of its growth, called dehydration synthesis and hydrolysis. It's the same thing you get when you bake a cake. You mix a batter and you get it liquid and you put it in the oven, you catalyze some reactions, and those molecules bond to each other. And in the process, they remove water, they dehydrate, and they synthesize into longer polymers. And then because you're a slob and you spilled some cake batter on the pan, you put it in the sink and you soak it, and you put water, hydro, and it does lysis. It breaks things. Hydrolysis, hydrolysis. And that basic reaction explains how amino acids join into proteins and sugars join into fibers and a whole bunch of other chemical reactions that are they allow you to grow things. And that was going on with a natural experiment in tide pools, in, which I love the phrase, the primordial soup that was going on Earth. And even though it was a low probability event, it happened. Either it happened or there were magical deities that created us, and I thought we'd been over that already. So, the rule one, maximize probabilities in your favor, which will get to, which will be complementary to a lot of other rules later, like thinking. But if you look at a situation and you say, oh, what are the odds of that happening? Well, if you can shift the odds in your favor, you got a better chance of success. And what's the best way to do that? Well, what should you do with that? Once you understand probabilities, well, you should do good. That's the second one. And that's linked to the Archean period, when life evolved, when it was nothing but cells on Earth. And we had Archean cells and bacterial cells, and eventually we got eukaryotic cells, because evolution was off to the races. That initial phase would have been chemical evolution. And I've talked about information before. Information gives us the pattern of matter and energy and space and time. And with an autocatalytic chemical replicator, like RNA in the primordial soup, it was catalyzing its own reaction. The information is intimately tied to the actual chemicals. And whatever energies were involved, tides and electromagnetic storms and sunlight and heat and volcanic activity, whatever mix of reagents gave us life, and it gave us that low probability event to start with, created a system that could stay alive. And staying alive versus dying is the ultimate good. So we should celebrate life. We should do good and celebrate life. And maybe perhaps we can refine that. But we're going to add some more rules. What would make it good? What's good about staying alive? Well, it's better than death, because guess what? We're all going to die, as far as the evidence tells us. You can deal with that one. That's one of the big ones that religion avoids. It says, oh, we have an afterlife. We have infinity. And now, maybe we don't. Maybe we freaking don't. Maybe we should just make the best of what we're doing here. And if we live in the now and take care of now, maybe that would be a better thing. And that's what do good says. Do good is the second commandment, the second initiative. And so we were maximizing probabilities, we're doing good. And how, well, before we make a choice about anything, and how we decide to do anything, because that's our ethical code, we should understand our environment. And that's what involved the next big leap in evolution, when we go to what's referred to as the Proterozoic. And that's the big leap from prokaryotes to eukaryotes, if you get your biology book out. And that's bacteria and archaea versus eukaryotes. Because at some point, eukaryotes evolved. And that changed the game. Well, staying alive became more of a game than just competition. Because all those single-celled organisms compete. They have to compete for resources. They have to crawl around in the primordial soup and stay alive. They have to grab molecules, suck up energy, get rid of waste, do basic metabolism, maintain homeostasis, replicate themselves, mutate, and evolve. They're doing all that. But then some of them realize that the other option to competition is to cooperate, is to work together, to form bigger units, to form specialized compartments. And that's what eukaryotic cells did. And that's why you have to understand your environment. How do you work? How do you, your personal environment, you have to understand your internal environment. You have to understand what it takes to stay healthy, what it takes for you to work. You have to understand who you are, and you have to understand how you fit into the environment. What do you need to extract from the environment? What energy and matter do you need to get? How do you move through space and time? What's out there? Who's going to cooperate with you? Who's going to compete with you? That's understanding your environment, and that's what got worked out during the Proterozoic. Because that's when we started building bigger things and bigger organisms. Eukaryotes are bigger than prokaryotes. And then we got multicellularity in there as well. So two big leaps during the Proterozoic, eukaryotic cells, and then multicellularity among the eukaryotes. Because that gives us all the big organisms. oak trees and whales and humans are all these huge biological organisms compared to cells. And that all started 2+ billion years ago, back in the Proterozoic. And it leads us to the next thing. So now we're looking for probabilities. We're trying to understand our environment. We're sorting out the lay of the land, trying to stay alive. And we're trying to make choices about stuff. And we know staying alive is a good one, dealing with nature. And then what? Then comes the Paleozoic. What happened in the Paleozoic? Vertebrates evolved. Have a spine. Stand up for something. There we go. There's commandment number 4. We're maximizing probabilities. We're doing good. We're staying alive. We're understanding the situation we're in. And we're going to take a stand on something. We are fucking going to build vertebra. And we're going to stand up. Well, first we were swimming. The first vertebrates would have been fishes. But then during the Paleozoic, some of them crawled up on land. Think about mud skippers and lungfish. And we got branches off the family tree there. And some of them crawled up. Tiktaalik, Ichthyostega. Those early amphibians. They experimented with different numbers of digits. They became tetrapods. They grew forelimbs and hind limbs. And they crawled up on the land. And they said, wow, it's really busy in the water. I'm going to hang out on the land for a while. And the amphibians still had to go back and reproduce. But then we got reptiles, too. The reptiles basically added some offense and defense. But that's the whole balance here. That's the stand you have to take. Who are you going to cooperate with? Who are you going to compete with? That's life as we know it. And that's why you got to stand up for something, which is what happened in the Paleozoic when we evolved into vertebrates. But we evolved from the reptiles that came from the amphibians, that came from the fishes. They got a variety of nooks and crannies there that need to be that could be understood through biological evolution. And then during the Mesozoic, we took one more big leap and we developed mammary glands. We figured out how to feed our young. We made a commitment to family. Take care of home. There's rule number 5. There's the 5th commandment. Take care of home. In the process of understanding your environment, standing up for something, you got to deal with your network. That we're stronger together than we are apart. It's better to have somebody to have your back. You can take a nap. You can relax a little bit. I got your back. You got my back. Working together, taking care of home, and making sure you have a secure, stable anchor to work from, a home base, that's a huge evolutionary leap. That makes it a lot easier to stay alive, which is the commitment mammals made when they started feeding their young. They didn't have to scrounge for food for their young. They evolved specialized mammary glands. It's probably why at our deep core, people are so fascinated with breasts. It's a fundamental property of life. You're nursed from the earliest day of your life, the earliest moment you're out of utero. Nursing is just sort of an extension of a placenta, if you think about it. A placenta is just an elaborate feeding tube that goes in, not much different than nursing, in the sense that we just moved you out of the safe environment of the home. Because prior to that, we were eggs. We were eggs that were laid outside the body. And reptiles realized that was, well, they didn't realize it, they just evolved away from it because it's hazardous. It's hazardous to leave your babies in the nest. Eggs taste good. Somebody else is going to come along and eat them. So what do we got going on here? We're halfway home. We are halfway home with our commandments. And then now we're in the home stretch. Now we're moved to the Cenozoic. Now we should celebrate diversity. Because what was the transition that gave mammals the big break to take over the planet for humans to dominate? It was that freaking meteor that hit 66 million years ago, blew up the Gulf of Mexico, created so many changes, and drove most of the dinosaurs extinct. Some of the birds made it, and the mammals. Endothermy, being able to control your temperature, gives us the ability to appreciate diversity, appreciate that shit happens, that something is going to happen that, like a meteor, and you have no control over it. And the best thing to do to be ready for problems is to have options. To have options. If you have options, there's a chance you're going to make it. If you have more tools at your disposal, if you have more genetic variables in your population, there's a chance somebody's going to make it. if when you get hit with something like a disease or a predator. And that's what evolution teaches us. We should celebrate diversity. And then we made the really big leap to being human, because once we were mammals, once the mammals took over in the Cenozoic, became the dominant land species. You know, and we got some of them moved back into the water with the whales and dolphins, the cetaceans. Some of them became huge elephants and predators, kept tigers and lions and bears. And some of them became primates. We branched off with the rodents, different than all the big hoofed animals and claws. And we snuck around a little bit with the rodents, and we branched off to the primates. And we evolved opposable thumbs so we could manipulate things. We could make tools. And once you can make tools, the advantage of having tools is you can do work. And that is the next commandment, is do the fucking work. And that's what happened during the first Anthropocene, which I overlap with the Holocene, if you're familiar with your geology. The Cenozoic narrows down to about 11,000 years ago, we warmed up. The last ice age thawed, and humans were able to move around the planet a little more easily. And some of us decided to settle down. That's when we started doing urban centers. We'd already domesticated dogs. We domesticated dogs from wolves about 20,000 years ago. That took a little work. Somebody had to deal with those puppies. But then we started farming, and we started regrowing crops and herding animals. And that gave us wealth. But that built up because of work. Prior to that, we were hunter-gatherers. We had to walk around all over the place and just get what we could. It took some work, but a lot more leisure time. Didn't have anything. The only thing you had to worry about was staying alive. But people started thinking about stuff, and they started working. And they said, well, if we put in a little work, we can actually have more stuff. I could stay here in the off-season. People got fat and lazy. Well, we didn't get fat. We didn't get fat till recently. But we were able to grow some excesses. We were able to build up a little wealth when we started doing agriculture. And we did that for about 5,000 years. Then about 5,000 years ago, we really started to think. We started taking that oral language that we'd been using to communicate. We started writing it down. We started to represent things with letters and words and write out things. And that started about 5,000 years ago. Same time we invented cash money. We invented mathematics, and we started counting things and starting setting value scales on stuff. We started building cash economies as opposed to just bartering economies. And that's when people took over. And that's when we started thinking about stuff. So working and thinking during the Anthropocene, during this last 10,000, 11,000 years, also leads us to commandment number 9, question authority. Because we had to build up hierarchies. We had to build up people in charge. The only way you can get a large group to work together is to get organized. And that means somebody's got to be in charge. But we should always question the authority. Authority should be a temporary process. We should all rotate through and see who has those skill sets to move people around. And that's what we should be doing with our lives. We should look around, question, and then enjoy the ride. That's the last one. I link that to the start of the nuclear era. We reached a point where we had so much authority. We had the colonial era for 500 years, and we're still in that because we got used to having leaders, and nobody questioned them. Now, you couldn't question the king. Don't question the king. Don't question the pope. They're infallible. That's the bullshit that goes on with civilizations. As we build up these hierarchies, and as long as things are working, we'll accept the ruler. We'll accept a benign king, as Xavier Riley wanted. But we should question that authority and enjoy what we have. And there's the arc. You maximize probabilities in your favor. You do good. You start by staying alive, keeping things, celebrating life. You look around and you learn about your environment and you understand your environment. And then you make a choice. You stand up for something. And at the very least, you should take care of home when you stand up for something. You should protect your source material. We all come from somewhere. Nothing comes from nothing. And so we're standing up for something. We're saying, I think we should steer in this direction. That's the beautiful thing about artificial selection. We can make a choice. And we can say, I think we want to steer life in this direction. And when we steer life in that direction, then that's artificial selection. And we're all doing that. There's 8 billion of us doing that. But we should at least think about what's good about it. And that's how we can treat life as an ongoing experiment, which is how we should look at it with a scientific worldview. We should do the work to stay alive, support whatever our goals are, think about things, question who's in charge, question authority, and enjoy the ride. Does it get any better than that? I don't think so. That means we don't need a lot of the rules we have. We don't need a lot of the crap. There's some real basic rules. Take care of each other. Do good. Celebrate life. Let people live. Let them go up to the point. Compete with them and cooperate them as we pursue our goals. And you know, without excessive murder. Sometimes you do have to kill something. But that's the whole point of an evolving civilization. And if these rules work, then we could start from the ground up. We could reshape society. We could each embrace those and take a vow. And this is what's going to cause the professional revolution. We're going to take professionals. So if you're a professional, if you're a mature adult, you profess a belief in something. You stand up for something. You understand the limits of whatever situation is, but you work towards that goal. You let other people work towards their goals. And when you run into somebody, you either be civilized and discuss it, or you fight. And that depends on the severity of the situation. How important is your goal? How much is somebody standing in your way? That becomes the essence of a living system. And that's what the Democrats missed with the Republicans. The Republicans defaulted to violence, and they all poo-pooed it. And they said, oh, you know, we got guns. We might threaten you. And people didn't appreciate, the left didn't appreciate that they said they're going to push this down to the natural limit. Hell with this civilization thing. We're going to push it back to the biological level. We're going to push it back to the natural economy and bring force back into the game. And if you want to do that, then you're not being civilized. But that's obviously why the majority of Americans wanted to reset the civilization. They didn't like where it was going. It had gotten too big. They were questioning authority. And they were thinking about it to some level. And they said, screw it. We're going to reboot. We're going to default back to religion, which some of them do. But that's what the left needs to do. The left needs to suck up its gut and say, hey, you know what? You want to play the violence game? Then we'll have to do something with that. So we're going to shut that down. But you got to be willing to challenge it. You got to be willing to challenge it and come up with better ideas. And these are the best ideas I've got. So we'll see if the Ten Commandments can help us out and sort that out. Wait till we start talking about Grand Falloons. That'll be next week. Have a good day.